Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Access Astrology. My name is Ann Ortley, and I'm an astrologer in Manhattan. And I'm sitting here at my bright red desk on the Upper East Side. And I am joined tonight by...
Mike Wolfs over on the west side of Manhattan.
And we're waiting for Heather. We believe she's joining us. We don't know where she is. She's probably out wrestling with grizzly bears or something fun like that. So what we do every week is we talk to you about the weekly weather, what it feels like, what the energy is about, and then we take calls if you have questions and you want to call in and ask us a question astrological about your chart or about what the energy is in the sky. And then we kind of, the whole idea is to make astrology accessible to people and to help people figure out what to do with the energy as it's swirling around in the heavens above their heads. So,
and what's that number for calling in?
The call-in number is 347-215-8881. 347-215-8881.
And what number do they push to get on the queue?
Heather. Or no, they push, not Heather, they push one.
One.
They push
so
the number one.
In, and you can either listen if you just call them, mm-hmm. or if you would like to speak with us, you press number one.
Right. And it takes you through to us. So forward we go. So what did you notice about the week ahead, Mark? What are your highlights and what's the things that draw your attention?
Well, for one thing, it's not a really roiling, boiling, starry sky. It's, relatively quiet as weeks go. We're kind of in between new full moon and new moon, and we're, not experiencing real big changes of direction and planets or things like that. Really the most active of the planets seems to be Mercury, which has just squared Mr. Pluto and is going to move into a square to Mr. Saturn. And then later on in the week, talks to a whole bunch of the other planets. So that's the busiest one.
Mm-hmm. Yep, definitely. Pretty cool. And I think when we look at, the energy of the week, when we see a week like this, the other thing that's happening is Mercury enters its shadow on Sunday, yesterday. And so what that means is we're going to have a Mercury retrograde later in the month of December. So the story for the Mercury retrograde starts this week, particularly today with Mercury and Saturn and Pluto all talking to each other. And then we get the theme of the story. We get the feeling for it. We understand what it's going to be about and how it's going to work. And then we kind of move forward into the next energy of the Mars retrograde, which also happens this week. We're starting to get into the part where Mars slows down and says, okay, don't go so fast. Let me break, because he's going to be retrograde and dancing in the sign of Leo for 6 months. So it's kind of a quiet week, which actually is good. Last week I found was pretty interesting. I had a number of clients have major events happen, like get fired or lose their jobs or, the company closed, their paychecks bounced. I had one client find out that, her husband was having an affair. I had another start an affair, it was a big week for changing your behaviors or starting your new activities. So when we see that, it's kind of like, okay, what is the energy about? And last week we had the Uranus station, and now every planet is moving forward again. And all of them are kind of full steam ahead. So we had kind of a shift in energy, and then we had the full moon, which had a finger of God in it. And when full moons have fingers of God, usually there's an event that changes the direction of our life and helps us move into a new way. So that was the energy of last week. And when we see that, we say, oh, okay, that makes a lot of sense, but at the same time, how do I work with it? And this week is really about figuring out how to work with everybody moving forward. And Mercury, as the planet talking to everybody, because he's very busy this week, he's talking to the Gang of Three, he's talking to Saturn and Pluto, he's talking to Uranus, he's talking to Vesta, basically about the only person he's not talking to is the sun. And Mercury is ahead of everybody right now because he's in Capricorn. So he's kind of the scout and he's way out there in front, so he's going to stop and turn back and come back and talk to everybody again in a couple of weeks. And so that's also important because he's picking up information that the rest of us need to pay attention to. He's sending it back. And when Mercury's in Capricorn, he doesn't talk very much. He just says a few words, and they mean important things. So when we see that, it's kind of like, okay, Mercury's not talking, or he's not saying much, but what he does say is really important. So I thought it was interesting. What do you think about that? You know, because Jupiter's also joining with Chiron, the first of the gang of three conjunctions is this week, too, on the 7th, which is what? Today.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we've been watching that gang of three at the in the late degrees of Aquarius for a while, and they kind of all pulled apart as they did the retrogrades, and now they're pulling back together. So Jupiter's catching up, and it's going to touch Chiron and then Neptune, and then Jupiter's going to move on pretty quickly, and it'll take the others a while to get out of Aquarius. But so it revs up that energy, and Jupiter coming to Chiron. You know, it should have something to do with health issues, and I always have the sense of sort of learning from our hardest lessons that comes up with that. And when Jupiter's involved, there's something beneficial to be gained from it. So I think for all of us individually, it's a good time to look and see how do we go about learning from difficult experience, sometimes failed experience or humiliating experience. How do we learn from that and take the bigger lessons, not the short-term hard lessons, but the bigger lessons and maybe the lessons we can pass on to others. So as Jupiter joins Chiron, was today, right?
Mm-hmm. The 7th, yeah.
Yeah, look around in your life and see what kind of issues there are there and what there is that you've learned and can pass along. That comes up. And then, you know, there's always the question of health and healing and, you know, this interminable debate about whether
on the healthcare bill, yeah.
Should have healthcare or not. You know, should we have healthcare or not?
I think healthcare is helpful, especially considering I've been kind of wiped out with this cold. And, you know,
yeah,
it's like, you know, 200 and some odd bucks to go get drugs for it. You know, it's like, how sick am I? Do I really want to pay that much money? As one of the 45 million I'm underinsured. I'm not uninsured, but I have a very high deductible. So basically, I pay for everything until I get to $10,000. I basically have to get run over by a truck for my health insurance to help me. Catastrophic, they call it. You have to have a catastrophe. But, you know, the regular run-of-the-mill stuff, you know, like you're sick, you can't go to the, you know, you got to think, well, I'm going to spend a couple hundred bucks to go to the doctor. How sick am I?
Right.
And I know a couple times I've gone, okay, I got a bladder infection. All right, cranberry juice. Okay, let's, you know, slippery elm tea, you know, and I kind of do the whole homeopathic stuff until I can't stand it anymore. And then I run screaming to the doctor and they're like, boy, this is a really big bladder infection. I'm like, yeah, I know. Tried for a week to cure it myself. Now I gave up and I'm buying on the antibiotics. But, you know, it's kind of one of those, I just look at this energy and go, okay, we really need to have a conversation. The other thing is, of course, with Neptune joining to Chiron, there's a whole big Chiron is the unwanted child, or the child that was a product of rape, or the child that his mother took one look at him and ran and said, I don't want to be his parent, and his father Zeus was missing, of course. So we're having the abortion debates, of course, with the health care bill too, and that's this week. So I think it's an interesting, you know, imagery that the unwanted child in the image in the sky is being discussed about, well, will we pay to kill it? No, we're not going to pay to kill it, but we won't pay to keep it healthy either. You are going to have the medical bills for this child for 20 years, but we're not going to pay to let you get rid of it because you don't want to have the medical bills and the financial responsibility and the parental responsibility and the whatever, because of the situations in your life. And, I just really wish that the only people that could vote on this would be women, you know? I don't think men should have a say in it, frankly. Sorry, Mark, it's my sexist statement for the night. I promise to be better. So.
Well, I don't think it's exactly sexist, you know? I think there's a... I would say that there needs to be some kind of a weighting of those votes, and that women should get more weight on the anything that has to do with bearing a child, you know, because they certainly carry the weight, right?
Yep. And then often they're left with the raising of it, you know.
Right.
And the, you know, emotional cost. I mean, I don't know, all the people I know that have had abortions, not one of them really wanted to do it. It was, you know, it wasn't a choice that was made willy-nilly, like they just said, oh, gee, let me run in and have an abortion. It, you know, it's always a considered choice, and it's considered based on where they are in their life and what's going on for them. It's not, and I just really get crazy about this implication that somehow we, you know, we love to have abortions. You know, it's just, it's like, you know, people, come on, this is, there's an awareness, there's a resonance that goes on. The body gets taken over by the baby. You know, we're a host carrying a life. It's definitely a consideration. One of my dad's...
Well, you know, another thing that comes up with it, too, is the notion of prohibiting anything.
Mm-hmm.
We should have learned something from the Prohibition era on alcohol. We should have learned something from the prohibition of marijuana.
And drugs.
Heroin. You know,
it works really well.
It works really well to keep it going.
Yes, it does.
And so, you know, what will happen if you prohibit abortions? Mm-hmm. You're not going to stop abortions.
No. Mm-mm.
You're just going to drive them underground.
Right.
Where they are unregulated and in large part unsafe.
Right. Right.
And then you put two lives at danger.
Yes.
At least. Mm-hmm. So...
Yeah,
and that's the, I mean, I don't know why that gets left out of the discussion.
Right, but it does, Well, they leave all the, have you noticed they leave the important parts out? Like if you and I ran the world, it would be a much nicer place.
Yeah, or at least there would be sane discussions,
right.
I think, you know.
Yeah. Let's have a sane discussion about this. Yeah, so anyway, so with Chiron being triggered today, you know, my Yahoo was, abortion is an issue with the health care bill, and I'm like, okay, you know, and I get going on this with my Republican relatives because a lot of them are pro, you know, I was raised Catholic, so a lot of them are pro-life, single-issue voters. You know, they're voting for Republicans, the Republicans are anti-abortion.
I'm always like,
you know, you had George Bush in office for years with a Republican Congress, and if he wanted to, he could have passed a friggin' bill. But he doesn't. He just uses it to wave it against, wave it like a red meat steak in front of the lions of the anti-abortion group. You know, he kind of waves it. And so I'm sure there's a little part of the Republicans that are going, oh, no, don't prohibit it, because then what are we going to do to get the anti-abortion people out to vote? Because if we do, it makes me nuts. I just get crazy about this. You know, I'm of the age where abortion was not legal when I was growing up. And it became legal when I was in college. And I had a friend who had one of those limousine abortions, you know, where you met the guy on the corner and you got in the car and we didn't know where she was. We didn't know if she'd come back. You know, she met him and went off. You know, it wasn't safe. It was standing in front of the Grant's supermarket, or the Grant's, which was a chain like Woolworths near where I went to school. Because she was having an affair with one of the faculty members and got pregnant, you know, and it was Catholic school. Of course, there's no abortions. And, of course, abortion wasn't legal even at that point. So she did come back, but youch, you know, there was a lot of praying that went on at the same time knowing what was happening. It's just, it just makes me, I get very antagonistic about it. But anyway, so that's why abortion is in the news. Pardon?
Yeah.
What?
All of which comes from looking at Chiron and Jupiter.
Chiron joining with Jupiter. And then the positive part of that is that somewhere in your chart you have a Chiron. And right now, Jupiter is saying to your wound, go heal. You know, take the wound that you have, whatever the wound is, whatever your Chiron is by sign and placement. Chiron is the planetoid that links between Saturn and Uranus. I kind of think of him as the consciousness of, we have a wound that we get from our family, and that wound, or from our soul, I mean, you know, and soul comes into the family that you're raised in, so then the wound gets activated by the family. But you then have this wound that is part of your path in the life, you know, to help you heal it, to help you work with that energy, and to come up with your contribution to the collective, because it's the planet that links our local family, our local society with the bigger collective, because it rotates between Saturn and Uranus. So symbolically, it links the two. And it says, take your wound and take it out and heal it. You may not make it 100% well, but you're going to have more knowledge than other people that don't have that wound, so that when someone else comes along with that wound, you can help them heal their wound too. So there's a lot of energy this week about whatever your wound was, which could have been very well activated by last week's Uranus going direct, because it aspected Chiron when it went direct. It woke up the Gang of Three. So all the Gang of Three planets went, and then now we're in a position of, okay, everybody's going forward, and Jupiter and Chiron are saying, okay, let's get together and put this wound to good use. We have it for a reason. Let's create some kind of positive feeling for it and positive connection for it and help it move forward. So I think that's kind of cool. So and let's see what else is going on. The moon is in Virgo Monday, Tuesday with bad closing aspect, separating aspect at 5:04 in the morning on Wednesday the morning. Moon is void all day Wednesday from 5:04 in the morning to 5:47 at night. That means it's a kickback kind of day. You're not supposed to do a whole lot of stuff except meditate and think about things. Of course, that's not how it really works, but it's supposed to actually be a huge wind and snowstorm on Wednesday here in New York, which will which will shut down the airports. I always like to see when there's those big long void moons, like what the weather's going to be, because sometimes the weather really is the reason why we have the void moon, or the void moon happens when the bad weather happens with the void moon. And then at 5:47 on Wednesday, the moon, this is Eastern time, 5:47 p.m., moon goes into Libra, where it's in Friday, or Thursday all day, and Friday to 12:45. And that has a nice aspect. That has a trine to Neptune. So that's a Wednesday night, Thursday, Friday morning, all good times to pursue your dream. Moon is void from 12:45 p.m. on Friday afternoon to 11:30 at night on Friday night. Then it goes into Scorpio, and it's in Scorpio on Hanukkah, which is on the 12th. Starts on Friday night, and it's in Scorpio on the 13th, and the void happens with a square to Neptune. So again, hard aspects. So this week has a lot of separating and releasing energy, because we've got an opposition and we've got a square. So it's releasing the dream, setting the dream free, saying, okay, I get it, I don't really want that. It's parting from things we no longer need. I know I took my fax machine down. I moved it for Thanksgiving because I serve on the filing cabinets. And then I went, you know, I have not faxed anything in 2 years.
Right.
I'm going to throw it away, you know. So I separated from my fax machine, which is hard for me to do, but I did it. And then on Friday night, late Friday night, really on Saturday and Sunday, those are days when it's really much about release too. And really kind of focusing. And also it's a square to Neptune, so we can have some pretty wicked weather in terms of the energy. So, and we did have a reader letter. You want to hear it?
Uh-huh.
Okay. It says, from Denizen 444, The Summer of Love, 1967. I'm currently reading a book about the life of Janis Joplin. In it, they talk about the moment when her career took off. This happened at the Monterey Pop Festival the weekend of June 18th, 1967. The music world changed after that weekend, too. Many bands got noticed and received record deals, which shaped and changed the world forever. It was also dubbed the Summer of Love. Can you talk about the aspects of that weekend and why it was so wonderful and impactful for decades to come? And that's from Denizen 444. I think that's a great question. So, do you have any, so we'll do Summer of Love, and that's June, I would say, let's just do June 17th, 1967. high noon, and it was in Monterey, California, I think, right?
Was it? Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was in Monterey. I think I remember hearing it was in... Because I went to see her Love Letters play when they... Her sister had published her her letters, because she wrote letters home to her family, and they were these lovely, lovely letters, you know, very sad on some levels, because she really was really always looking for approval on some level with the folks, and, you know, they were very conservative from Texas. And then she had this kind of wild life that she was living on this other side where she was really getting success and fame, but it wasn't anything that her family would necessarily approve of. So she would write these letters saying, you know, I just had da-da-da-da-da, and then she'd go, you know, I miss you, and I'll be by to visit. And it was a really wonderful, wonderful show, and they had two versions of her. They had the one that was the sad version who wrote the letters, and then they had a singer, who a rock and roll woman singer, who portrayed her voice and sang her songs. And so the two of them would meet on stage sometimes and talk to each other. And then other times she would just read the letters, the regular one. And then other times the rock and roll one would just sing. It was a very cool show. It was down at the Village Gate. But it was one of those, you know, and that was the summer that Jimi Hendrix and, you know, a number of people, not Jimi Hendrix, who was the guy? Jim Morrison died, and they kept asking her, are you going to die like him? And she's like, no. And then, of course, she did. But so anyway, sorry, this is a minor off the track. Mark, I swear Mercury was still in Sag the way I'm going here. So anyway, so the Summer of Love for June of 1967 in Monterey, California, I did June 17th, high noon, middle of the conference. And what was happening that day, or that week end, I guess is probably the right way to look at it, was Uranus and Pluto were joined in 18 degrees of Virgo, which, of course, is the degree of the World Trade Center attacks, and it's a very active degree in the United States chart. That's the degree of our Neptune at 19 degrees of Virgo. So we often have major events at 18 degrees of the mutable signs, particularly Virgo. So that particular weekend, Pluto was there. Pluto always brings transformation. And Uranus was at 20 degrees of Virgo, and they both were in sextile to Neptune at 22 degrees of Scorpio. And Saturn was trine to Venus and Jupiter. Saturn and Venus were in a trine that summer, which is why it was the Summer of Love. Saturn was getting a little love from Jupiter and from Venus on that particular weekend. So, of course, it was a very big rock and roll weekend. So I think that Saturn-Venus aspect, the trine of it, was really contributing. And then Jupiter was joined to Venus. And Venus is in Leo, where Mars is now. So that's why you asked the question, Denizen, because Mars is triggering that Venus, saying, why was that summer more different than any other summer? And Mars was in Libra, the sign of music, for that particular concert. And Mars was aspecting Pluto and Neptune and forming kind of a little mini trine there with them. And then we also had Sun in Gemini trine to the Moon in Libra. So there were lovely trinal aspects. We also had Mercury square Mars, so it was changing the way people thought. And we had Mercury trine Jupiter. So the squares gave it energy, and the trines gave it flow and said, okay, go out to the world, go out to the world. And Juno at 23 Leo was square to Neptune at 22 Scorpio, saying, let's take this to a different place. Let's partner with this music and creativity. And then Chiron was square to the Gemini Sun in the last degrees of Pisces. So whenever we see a planet at the last degrees, we always know it's a super, super important planet. So Chiron was in Pisces at the very last degree, which is 29 Pisces is known for musicians. George Harrison had it. Eric Clapton had it. A lot of the really famous, really, really good musicians have songs that have important planets at that degree, because it's the world axis, but it's the world axis as the end of something. And then as Chiron goes into Aries, it's the new beginning of the new season. So we're going to have that this next summer when Uranus hits the end of Pisces and goes into Aries. We're going to have a real season change because Uranus is going to start a new 84-year cycle in the whole running through the zodiac. So we're basically going to have a little mini summer of love in the summer, this time June, July, when Uranus changes. But that summer, Chiron was changing in the sign of music, and it was aspecting Neptune and Mercury, and Ceres is also at 29 Cancer. So Ceres at 29 Cancer, trine to Jupiter and Scorpio, 22, and that Jupiter's, they're all very active. They're all kind of intertalking. And then the trine to Neptune, to Chiron in Pisces, gives us a grand trine in water at the last degrees of creation in the case of Chiron. And it says, you know, what's your tribe? Who's your people? Where are you going? And then when it goes into Aries, Chiron in Aries is, Chiron is generally a very sexual placement, very often found in really important relationship charts that have a sexual component to them because of the bestial nature of Chiron. He's half animal, half human. So he's got a very strong sexual component. So Chiron at the very last degree of Pisces, about to shift into Aries, which is kind of the pulsing beat of rock and roll. So I think that would be it. I would like to see the starting time for the Monterey Festival, but just doing that one day. We've got a lot of stuff that says, you're right at the moment of change. You're right at the moment of change, ready for a new life to begin. So you have any thoughts on the chart, Mark?
Well, it is interesting, the Jupiter, Venus, and Leo, and, you know, it really sets up a whole kind of rock and roll sensibility there, you know, that was really important. And then, you know, that being able to get up on a stage and just give out the energy, you know, really bright sunshine. And I think Chiron being in 29 Pisces also characterized a lot of the music of that era, too, because there was a rawness to it and a willingness to just operate out of whatever our own lessons were. And, you know, if it's coming from pain, show the pain, right? Mm-hmm. And Chiron lends itself very much to that. And it comes from a kind of a universal pain of Pisces. And moves it into Aries, making it individual so that, in a way, everyone could find their own individual take on what collectively was being represented.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, totally. And then the Gemini Sun, you know, is the messenger, the new words coming out. And so Gemini would, you know, at noon on each of those days, Gemini would be high in the chart, and it was receiving the square from Uranus and Pluto saying, okay, let's change this up. Let's come up with some kind of new way of looking at the world. You know, Pluto-Uranus, we're going to actually be working with that pretty long. Coming this summer, Uranus and Pluto are going to be squaring each other, and they square each other 7 times. And when I was in ISAR, in August, one of the things, I never remember which one it is, but they travel together, Rick Levine or Jeff Joy or one of the two of them. I went to their lecture, and I think it was Jeff, and he said, yeah, it's the summer, you know, if you miss the 60s, if you miss the summer of love, and he's kind of like a hippie guy, he goes, if you missed it, it's coming back starting next summer because Uranus is going to be squaring Pluto, and all the seeds and the music from that time and the stuff that got planted then, we're going to see if we like it, and we're going to see if we want to keep it or change it. We're going to have the opening square where we have to adjust the energy of the 60s. And you could tell he was really excited, and I was thinking, yeah, I bet you had a lot of fun that summer of love. Because,
wow,
you know.
So I wonder what this will mean for all the leftover vinyl.
I know. Probably it'll be an
uptick.
We're
finally going to sort it out.
We're going to figure out what to do with all those vinyl records, yeah.
Yep.
Yes, because the summer
which
of love is
and which ones
the summer of the summer of love is kicking up, and very active, I might add. Yeah, no, so anyway, so we are going to have the Summer of Love again, Denizen, so get excited when you're reading about it. You've got like a year and a half starting in the summer where we're going to have a reissuing of that energy where we're going to change and shape the world forever into the new thing. Although this is going to be with Uranus in Aries and Pluto in Capricorn, it'll probably be more the summer of profound transformation or the season of profound transformation rather than love. Because Pisces is about love, and Venus in Leo and Jupiter in Leo are love. Those are love energies. Mm-hmm. And Pluto in Aries, Capricorn in Aries are a little more revolutionary. They're more like, you know, let's change the system. We have to adjust it. We have to adjust it. So.
Right.
Yeah. So it's
cool. Yeah, I think the love part of it will be, you know, kind of recreational. You know.
It's not going to be
the
so
real
much,
work.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, the real work will be actual, mm-hmm. you know, changing the system and all that.
Right.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so it's good. All right, so let's see what else is going. So we'll put up the phone number, 347-215-8881. 347-215-8881. And I just want to say one more thing about the week's aspects. Because Mercury is so busy this week, one of the things he does on the 10th and the 11th, which is Thursday and Friday, the moon's going to be in Libra, but Mercury's going to be in Capricorn. So he's going to be arguing with the moon on some level. And he also then goes on to semi-square the Gang of Three. So he's going to argue with first Chiron and then with Jupiter and then with Neptune. And then on the 13th, which is Sunday, he has a gift of brilliance with Uranus. So when Mercury semi-squares something, especially Mercury when he's in Capricorn right now, one of the things we can find is that the energy feels like no. No, you can't. No, I'm not going to. No, no, no. It's a very no energy. Semi-squares are no's that have a stress to them. You're not having, you know, kind of when I teach it to classes, I'm always like, a no, you know, a square is a 90-degree angle. So a square is your elbow, you know, when your arm is on the table. That's a square. You know, from your shoulder down to your arm, that's a square. A semi-square is when your elbow is partially bent and kind of like you've got your hand on your chest. So you don't have a lot of leverage with a semi-square. You know, you've already kind of contracted the muscle past where it can go. So when you hold your arm like that, you can feel the stress in the arm. You don't have the leverage to get it to move, as opposed to when the arm is sitting on the table square to the shoulder. You know, the arm runs across and then the shoulder, the lower part of the arm, I used to know what these were called, the radius and the ulna. And is that right? The humerus?
Yep.
No, it's the hug, they're humerus. Huh?
Humerus is the upper ulna.
Okay, yeah, okay. Radius and ulna. Whatever. But at any rate, the upper, above, from the elbow to your shoulder. I used to know this. I hate it. My brain doesn't work anymore. That part of your arm, and then the part that sits on the desk is the bottom part. And that's a square. That's what a square is. You've got, like, maximum leverage. You can pick up something, move it, get something to happen. But when you've got it 45 degrees, you got your fist on your heart, you don't have leverage. You just can't get things moving. So when Mercury is in a semi-square to these planets, basically he's saying to them, no, 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 you can't do it. Because remember, he's ruled by Saturn right now, and he's a man of few words, but it's not pleasant. And they're all saying, but why not? I want it. So we have to get Mercury past them. Now, at the same time, Venus has really lovely aspects to these planets all week. She has a quintile from Sagittarius to Chiron, Jupiter, and Neptune on the 9th and the 10th. So Venus, geez Louise, some cat is causing trouble in my house. See, this is what happens. I came home from dinner. I got on the phone. I did not feed them. I'm having cat fights in my house. I want you to know. There's like angry cats throwing things around my house. I will feed you in
well,
about 20
it's
minutes,
better than
guys.
Having...
Huh?
It's better than having poltergeists.
I know. But it's like I'm hearing bangs. I mean, there's fights. There's hissing. Yes, you know, you got to feed them. I mean, and it's not like they don't have dry food. There's dry food in the bowl. They want the can of wet stuff. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so Venus has this great idea, you know, when she's talking to them, because she's all inspired and she's in love and she's in Sag and she's a happy girl. And, of course, she's answering to Jupiter. So she's saying, hey, guys, how about if we go do this? And then Mercury comes along and goes, no, you can't. No, you can't. So it's a big week for you really see something you want to do, and then Mercury tells you, no, you can't. And so you have to say to Mercury, well, you know, how about we try something new? And you do that on Sunday, okay? After you get the no, you can't earlier in the week, on Sunday you get the sure, go ahead, give it a try. And so recognize you are going to get a no this week, and that's part of the energy. So when that happens, it's like, okay, forward we go. So, all right, and we also have Athena going into Scorpio, and that tends to make us all be very smart and very strategic in our approaches. So our call-in number is 347-215-8881, and we have a caller, so we will click on the thing. Hi, caller 212, are you there?
Hello. Yes, I am.
Hi. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm very good. How can we help?
Well, you had a lot of answers earlier. Let me just say that I've gotten into a bunch of energy work lately.
Mm-hmm.
I've been into tapping for a while, and then I got into just a whole bunch of other stuff seems to be swirling around, and people seem to be talking about energy healing and energy medicine and those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
Is that because we're all healing the Chiron stuff?
Yep. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But there's so many new ways to do it.
I know.
Why are all of these new things coming up?
Because we're starting a new 12-year cycle. And so
a new 12-year cycle of what? Which
of
one?
Healing. Right. So
Jupiter with Chiron.
Yeah. See, Jupiter joined with Chiron in the summer, right? May and July. And this is the third time. So what happens when we start a new 12-year cycle, new things come in to say, hey, I'm here, look at me. And they then appear, and we go, oh, wow, let's try this. Let's see how this works. Because we are starting, whenever we have a conjunction with stuff, and in this case it's Jupiter with the healing planet, Jupiter likes to heal things. Neptune likes to heal things. Neptune's divine guidance. Neptune is the search for redemption and healing. And Chiron is the wound. So the three of them together are saying, let's have some healing. That's why we're looking at modifying healthcare. And so they've been talking all summer together. So this is all stuff that's kind of been around, but now it's time for it to become public and be seen because of the Jupiter, Neptune, Chiron together saying, let's work this on a new level. Let's work energetically. It's in air. You know, Aquarian's all about the energy. So Aquarius is an energetic sign, so we're working on the energetic realm. You can't necessarily see it. But, man, if somebody does a cranial work on you, you can feel it.
Yeah.
So it's that kind of energy. Yeah, it's not necessarily traditional modalities. It's Aquarian. It's unusual. It's different. And because Chiron is in the mix, it's got a healing component. And because Neptune's in the mix, it's got a transformational quality to it. And because Jupiter's in the mix, it really feels good. And we like it. And we can get addicted to it because it's so much fun. So, do you have any other ideas on it, Mark? What?
No, go ahead, Mark.
I think that covers it.
Okay.
Quite well, yeah. Uh-huh.
Well, are these, when these things happen, they're here to stay? Because part of what I'm looking at the whole concept with the healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
And if, in fact, this energy healing takes off,
mm-hmm.
I mean, if it becomes mainstream, mm-hmm. then as far as I'm concerned, a lot of the issues about health care go away or get lessened somehow.
Yes.
Unless they start paying energy healers, you know, or something. I just don't know. And so if I understood what you said correctly, you were saying that at the beginning of a 12-year cycle, a lot of new stuff comes because it takes it the 12 years. Basically, you didn't say this, but my guess is because it takes it the 12 years to sort of work its way through.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so...
And it's probably been around for a while, building energy. And so now it's kind of coalescing and everybody's going, oh, well, and this is related to that. Do you see how this relates to that? So there's a combo going on. Like, not all this stuff sprang out of the woodwork starting in May, but it's been building, you know, the energy concept has been building over time.
Okay.
Right? But now it's like, okay, this works, so why not use this as a modality?
Okay. And you see it after the 12 years sticking around?
Yeah. Yeah,
okay.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah, because whenever we start a new cycle, you know, the whole idea is we evolve into the next level. You know, we're starting a new cycle and we're evolving. So when that happens, there's an evolutionary push. In this case, because Neptune's joined to Jupiter, even a bigger evolutionary push than just plain old Jupiter in a house. So if you think back 12 years ago to what you were learning in 97 and what you were learning in 85, and if depending on your age, what you were learning in 73, there's a correlation between these things. And you probably are having it through either your first house or your sixth house, which are healing houses, or if you're a practitioner, maybe through your seventh, where people are coming to you and saying, hey, do you know this new technique? And so, like, the way, like, if you, like, Mark would be able to do this with yoga, because he's a yoga guy.
Right.
You know, like, watching yoga evolve through our culture, you know, it back when I was young, it was weird. You know, you sat and you meditated and you did anything. And now everybody does yoga. It's like, I don't know, I mean, I don't, because I can't stand on my head, but, like, everybody I know does yoga. And Mark,
okay.
Like, the evolution of it, did it match in the 12-year cycles?
I don't know about that, but one of the things that I would look at with what's going on now is I think what we're experiencing is sort of parallel universes,
mm-hmm.
You know, what's called alternative healing or alternative modalities, right? I think have a track of their own, and it's largely because what's at stake, especially in the healthcare bill, is the established modalities, and those are geared very, very clearly toward making money for an industry.
Right.
So it's viewed as an industry there, whereas the energy healing doesn't look at itself as an industry, and that's what puts the two on a different track, and yet both go forward. So, you know, they're both, you can read them in the Neptune-Jupiter-Chiron conjunction. That's it's all up at the same time. And you've got both universes moving forward, and we'll see them go through a 12-year cycle. But they have different purposes, and they'll follow a different track. And both are going to grow.
But do you think if we get more, you know, do you think that there would be a prophetizing of the energy modalities? Or do you think because it's kind of an etheric work, it's a little hard to prophetize? That
yeah,
the medical community would take it over?
Well, it won't get prophetized because what will happen is the once you do that,
mm-hmm.
the ability to work with it goes away.
Oh, okay.
So, for example...
What are you saying?
If you assign a high profit motive to energy healing,
okay,
you're going to lose the healing part of it. And it won't be effective. It simply won't be effective. If it's, for example, controlled by insurance companies. I'll give you an example. I've done some work in cancer treatment facilities, right?
Okay.
And with yoga. And, you know, there are ways to use it in very helpful ways with people. But one of the things that we were told at one point is you yoga teachers must never have any of these people stand up during a class. And it's like, oh, no, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Where did this come from? Well, obviously it came from lawyers, right?
Oh.
And I look around the room and I realize, okay, this is an outpatient facility. I mean, the treatment center was outpatient. Every one of these patients got here traveling through the Bronx on buses. You know,
and they can't stand up.
And they walk in the door to have their yoga class, and they tell them, don't stand up, my goodness. You know, if you fall down, you'll sue the hospital. You know,
oh.
It's like, they didn't come in wheelchairs. They walked in. They rode the bus. You know,
okay.
You can ride a bus through the Bronx. What's to worry about? So anyway, I'm saying, you know, this is what would happen if you really tied in the energy work or any of the alternative modalities to the established system. They would then come under those kind of protocols. And there's reason to have those protocols, you know, that it's not entirely silly. But do you see that it takes away the effectiveness of what you're doing?
I lived through a situation similar in a corporate environment for something. Yeah. And when once you take that out of it, then it's only there in name only. I mean, it's just, okay.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, so that might happen. I mean, a certain amount of it might get, we could say, co-opted into the established system. But there will be a bunch of people just running around on the fly still doing the traditional work. And so it'll still be effective in that sense.
Okay.
But whatever is pulled into the established system is going to be drained of its, you know, its potency, really, because it has to answer to all the lawyers, it has to fill out all the forms, it has to, you know, all these various things, and it eventually gets put on protocols and, you know, decision trees and all that kind of thing, and you eliminate potency at every point with those kind of healing things. So it's not entirely bad, because what it will do, if it's in the established system, you know, whoever does that work will at least be introducing people to it, and there will be some benefits to it, but nothing like, you know, when it can really operate on its own. So again, two tracks, and both are viable and both valid, but one is more potent.
Okay.
And, you know, people will find their way to it. You know, that's my view. And the way that the Neptune and Chiron and Jupiter are working, they're working with both. So any form of healing is getting a boost.
Getting a boost, yeah.
Oh, that, I find that very encouraging. Thanks.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, I think it's
super.
Yeah, cool. Thanks. Good question.
Okay, thanks.
All right.
Yeah.
Bye. Yeah, no, I think, you know, when we're looking at it in terms of long-range stuff, you know, I know that they did studies recently, the National Institute of Health, were checking a number of the modalities, such as Reiki and acupuncture and stuff like that, and saying, so, like, how does this work? You know, what does it actually do? And, you know, really trying to systematize, and I think there was a certain element of control. Like, if we're gonna diagnose and provide, you know, suggest our patients try this, that they need to, you know, we need to know what it's going to be and how it's going to behave and what they're gonna experience. So I know in my case, you know, I have people come. Sometimes their charts will indicate fertility treatments, you know, such as acupuncture. And acupuncture is, you know, I've got some acupuncturists that are highly gifted in, you know, making babies. Or helping baby energy. I don't know what they actually do because I'm not an acupuncturist, but they get the baby energy swirling around in there and the babies come in, you know, so it's kind of cool. And, you know, it's a modality and a treatment modality that is a good adjunct, especially if someone's doing any fertility work. But if they're just plain old trying to make a baby, it's also helpful. And
mm-hmm.
so, and I know for myself, when I had a uterine fibroiditis, I was getting older, it was, okay, we're going to take out your parts. And I'm like, oh, I think we're not. And I, you know, successfully staved off surgery with acupuncture.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't go away, but it didn't hemorrhage and it behaved itself and, you know, it was kind of a well-behaved uterine fibroid. So, and then once, you know, you stop menstruating, it kind of goes away all by itself. So
mm-hmm.
it's understanding these modalities as a means to the end. You know, we're, as we get more responsible for our health and as we change the paradigm from being control-oriented, I never remember how to say it, but allopathic, where we're seeing a disease model and we're trying to fix it from an external point of view, and we move towards the other kind, which I want, is the kind
mm-hmm.
where you go and you pull out the healing from the person. You know, and I know my dad, you know, would say sometimes, like, I have no idea what I'm doing. I don't even know that I'm actually healing people. He was a neurologist. I, you know, I take care of them, you know, I help them, but, you know, I don't know how the healing actually happens. You know, it happens. It's part of the mystery of humans. So, and if it's a disease that's brought about by some kind of mental turbulence or mental problems because of the situation you're in, like fibromyalgia is very much an emotional disease. And so very often there's a source of enormous tension in your life that contributes to the stress that causes that disease to really erupt. So it's, you know, I think there's an enormous amount of stuff that as we get more involved in this metaphysical understanding that we're going to learn how it all works. And as we, you know, whatever, move forward in the world, we get there clearer too. So kind of cool, actually. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can see, you know, everything's getting a boost now.
So. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very cool. So,
right.
We,
along with the squabbles,
right?
That have their political payoffs.
That have their political payoffs, and everybody gets all excited about. And we have another caller, I think. I'm not sure, but I'll try and see if I can get
okay.
Hello, caller, are you there?
Is this the 212? Because if so, it's me. I had to call back in. I got kicked off.
Okay, no problem. You have another question?
You know, I did wonder how the healthcare thing is going to end up, because it just seems like it's going to be so watered down, and that we're going to end up with raising costs and not having the care we thought we'd have, and I'm concerned. I think it's a really good thing to do something. I just am concerned that because all these voices have been listened to, that especially the naysayers, that we're going to end up with something that is more problematic than solves the problem.
Yeah, probably initially. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and initially meaning for 4 or 5 years, or initially meaning for?
Initially meaning for an adjustment for people to change their ideas.
Mm-hmm.
About what they think is possible.
I don't understand what
moment,
you're saying. Oh, go ahead.
At the moment, what seems to be the most important is that everybody can say that the health care bill is a victory for them.
Okay.
Right? Everyone wants to be able to say our side won. So there has to be room in it for everybody to claim that. But then after all that ruckus settles down, people will be able to assess a little more carefully what the actual outcome is. So we really need something to be in place, and it's only by seeing the outcome that we'll be able to have real debate. See, right now, everything is all speculative. Oh, if you do this, then the result will be that, you know, and everybody claims a different thing, you know, even about, like, the financial piece of it.
Yeah.
Oh, but if you do this, we'll go broke, or this or that, or... Oh, no, we can pay for it out of this. It's all speculative. So something has to be started. And then I think what Anne is saying, it's going to get fixed.
Mm-hmm. Well, it'll get fixed, but what you're saying is it has to take place. So it could be 5 or 6 years down the road before it gets fixed.
Yeah, yeah. It's like anything when we're changing, you know, we're having a repeat of In the Sky, you know, the guy wrote before about the summer of 67,
yeah.
Uh-huh. You know.
Mm-hmm.
And back then it was black people didn't want to be at the counter anymore. They wanted to sit at the counter. They wanted to sit where they wanted to sit on the bus. Women were like, we want to be able to apply for the jobs. We don't want, you know, when I was first looking for work, it was men only, women only. You know, like there were jobs you couldn't apply for. Women didn't have credit cards. I still remember when my mother got her first credit card. You know, they didn't have their own credit in their own name. So we had to get the change in place. Right. Then once the change is in place, then we go, okay, the change is in place, then we tweak it. So the gay people wanted to be able to buy each other a beer without getting arrested. Now they want to go and get married, you know, when all the rest of us want to get divorced. It's understanding that when we have these sea changes, what we have to do is say, okay, we're making a change now. And then everybody goes, oh, wow, I don't want to change, or okay, go ahead and do the change, but once the change is made, then we get to learn how we feel about it. So for, like, my niece, gay marriage is a no-brainer, you know. My father, gay marriage is the end of society. You know, it's what but they grew up with it. It's like, what's the big deal? Why can't they get married? But the generation always has to kind of come in and say, okay, let's move forward with this new position. And then once it's in place, everybody gets used to it. And then we go, well, you know, the world didn't end because black people can sit wherever they want in a bus. Heck, we got a new president that's black. It's understanding that that kind of change takes time. And as a culture that's really mired in profit, 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 and as the Reagan years stripped away all the middle class supports and stripped away really truly the middle class and sent all of the jobs overseas, so you can have one person earning an income and paying. You need a two-family income. And even then you may not have enough to pay your bills. As we reevaluate what we need as a culture, and healthcare right now has gotten so out of control because it's a profit-based system. So once we put in something that we can then work with, then we can continue to say, okay, public option, why are the insurance companies making money on this? Take the profit out. Or, you know, when I say to people who come to me and are arguing with me about healthcare, I say, would you want Medicare tomorrow? And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, that's public option. That's what that's called. And they're like, oh. But once they get it, then they think it's a no-brainer. If I said to you, tomorrow you have to pay for the schooling for your child, and everybody has to pay for school tuition for all their kids, we take free education for granted. But that wasn't originally how it was supposed to be. It was all supposed to be tuition-based. But they said, oh, no, good to have an educated populace. We have to say good to have a healthy society, and there's a reason for it. And people are going, I don't want Medicare, I don't want, but then they're like, don't touch my Medicare or Medicaid. That's government-owned healthcare.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's about getting people comfortable with the idea, and then they go, you know, this isn't so bad. I don't really care if gay people get married, it's okay for me. You know, I actually know some nice gay people, and they want to, you know, they have a kid, they want to get married. It's, you know, they should be able, but it takes time. And there was a book I read once where it talked about, like, when, like, Galileo or Kepler or any of the big astrologers or any of the big astronomers would say, oh, yeah, we revolve around the sun. Originally, they were a heretic.
Right.
And then eventually everybody came around to say, you know, that actually wasn't such a bad idea. And that's kind of where we are with healthcare. Why should it be profit-based? Well, it always has been. Right. Is that working for you? Well, not so much when I have to pay $1,500 for my insurance for my family and my rent is only $1,000. You know?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, but you have to kind of get to that part before you start looking and going, you know, why is it like this? And that's where we are right now as a culture. And so we have to kind of get to the point where it's actually normal to have health care that you don't have to pay an arm and a leg for. Or if we do have to pay an arm and a leg for it, we'll say, how come I have to pay more now? Fix this. And then they get to fix it and tweak it, you know.
Okay. And
makes sense?
Yeah, it does. The one last question, and I know we're just about out of time, but the one last question is, like, where there was a block of Republicans who just have said, I'm not voting for anything,
mm-hmm.
then is that reflected in the planets that there's going to be that much opposition? And can you, and it would it have been possible to tell even who the people were that were going to block?
Yeah, you can tell who they are for sure.
Okay.
And definitely, you can definitely see that there is an opposition. We have Saturn and Uranus fighting in the sky. It's the same aspect as when the black people said, I don't want to sit in the back of the bus anymore.
Okay.
So the Saturn part of the people are saying, no change, no change. Leave it the way it is. Take it back even further. You know, put it back on the plantation. And then the other people are saying, change is good. Change, change. Change always wins out. Ultimately, because we are living in a changing world. However, we have to go through the struggle. And right now, the struggle is, right now everybody's even because all the planets are going forward. But when they passed the bill in September, Uranus was going backwards and Saturn was going forwards. In April, Uranus is going forward and Saturn is going backwards. And then next spring, when we have the final, they're both going forward. So we have few versions left. We have two more hits to go, end of April
uh-huh.
and then July.
Okay.
In July, we actually know what we're going to have. That'll be when it actually is in place and we see how it starts to unroll.
Okay.
Make
great.
Sense?
Oh, yeah, that's perfect. Thank
but
you.
But, yeah, it's the struggle of Uranus and Saturn, no change versus change.
Okay.
Same fight as the 60s. different story. Healthcare instead of
different
being able to buy my friend a drink, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, you know, we get there. It just takes some time.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
You.
Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay.
All right, so we ran out of time. That was good. So, Mark, why don't you close us up and tell them where they go to write us questions or call in or whatever.
AstroNYC.com, AstroNYC.com. Look us up and join us next week.
And tell your friends about us. And my name is Ann Ortley, and I'm an astrologer on the Upper East Side, and we like to make astrology accessible to the people. And I'm joined with my friend,
Mark Waltz, over on the west side of Manhattan. And normally Heather Roan Robbins is with us from North Dakota.
Yes, but she's doing something in the woods again. I bet she's camping again. You know, she always goes camping on Sundays and Mondays. All right, so have a great week, people. And remember, when the no's come, yes comes on Saturday, okay? No's in the middle of the week, yes on Saturday. Don't take it personally. Talk to you next week. All right, bye.
Bye-bye.